RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So, to the UN's Pact for the Future and its implications. The Summit of the Future is 22nd and 23rd September in New York. So very soon, world leaders will convene to discuss proposals that critics believe will enshrine global digital ID, online censorship, and give the UN Secretary General unprecedented power. To talk about this, which is within the week, is Meryl Nass. Now, Meryl joined us, if you remember, in early June to talk about the international health regulations. Well, Meryl is back with us again. Physician researcher, first person to prove an epidemic was due to biological warfare. She revealed the dangers of the anthrax and COVID vaccines. Her medical license was suspended for treating COVID and spreading misinformation. And she writes on Substack at Meryl's Chaos newsletter. Meryl, it's great to have you back. Thanks for coming back on.
Hey, thank you for inviting me.
Okay, so I'm looking at your latest piece on your Substack, Meryl's Chaos newsletter, The Disaster That Is the Pact for the Future. Disaster. Elaborate.
Sure. So we spoke about the WHO and the two documents, massive amendments to the international health regulations and a new pandemic treaty that the WHO was trying to move forward. And it would have caused a lot of things to happen. But one of them, one of the important ones, was to give the director general of the WHO the power to declare a public health emergency of international concern. He actually has that power now. He can declare it. But the powers that would accrue to him once he declared it would change. So he would be able to actually tell nations what drugs they could and could not use. Potentially, he could mandate vaccines, mandate lockdowns, et cetera. So that he did not get those powers, but they were sought. And the nations are still negotiating the pandemic treaty. So the problem isn't over. And the whole biosecurity agenda that was part of that is being put into place by Canada, the U.S., Switzerland, et cetera, despite the fact that the nations did not come to an agreement about it. Now, what the U.N. is doing, and they've been, you know, a couple of years into this process, is essentially a parallel track as the WHO. So they have this summit of the future and have created three documents, but the most important is the Pact for the Future. And they are seeking to have all the nations again come to an agreement and sign on to this Pact for the Future, which would give the Secretary General of the UN similar but even greater powers than the WHO Director General was seeking. So the Secretary General would be able to declare a global shock. And once he declares that, he would then activate what they're calling an emergency platform. And they haven't told us exactly what it is, but between the Secretary General and the emergency platform, they would basically manage the emergency. And this would be some emergency that occurs in more than one country.
So a financial emergency, a financial shock, as an example.
It could be a financial shock, anything. So they've talked about all sorts of shocks. They've listed seven specifically, and it was interesting that the UN lists pandemics and biological warfare as two of them. So they were already planning that if the WHO didn't get the power, the UN would try to get the power to manage them as well. Others are an event in outer space or a supply chain emergency, a cyber emergency. And the final of the seven is a black swan event, which means anything that the Secretary General chooses to designate as an emergency. And that could be a climate emergency.
Well, I notice in looking at the summitofthefuture.org/pact page, and they are straight up about it. I mean, there's lots of happy talk in there, as you would expect, but they mention the climate emergency in the on the front page as if it was settled something. So, yeah, it's got to be in there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then they can tell us how it needs to be managed. So that, you know, there's a lot more to it than that. It's a 29-page document. It's on its fourth iteration. So there have been three prior drafts that they could not get agreement on. And they are hoping to gain an agreement again this coming Monday.
So the similarity, like you said, parallel track with international health regulations, WHO, no coincidence there. The two almost cover each other if one lacks on one side, you've got to cover it on the other, and vice versa. Is that how we should think about it, do you think?
That's how I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, okay. So they really want this all done.
Yes, they are in a big hurry. They're in such a big hurry that they admit that the Sustainable Development Goals, which they claim in this document, are at the center of basically the new. So what they're saying is we need to transform global governance, whatever that means, and. So the Sustainable Development Goals are to be at the center of this transformation of global governance, and they are also to be at the center of a transformation of the world's financial architecture, which the UN has proposed as well. They are a bit cagey about what they mean. They've issued 11 brochures, basically talking about all the things they want to change in the world going forward, including education, computer, cyber things, but. And one of them is about the emergency platform, but another is about the financial architecture. And they specifically say, basically, they want to be able to loan money to nations and maybe even non-nations, despite their past history of paying back loans. And they want to be able to make larger loans and longer payback periods. And they don't want to just value things based on GDP alone, which we can see when we look at the Natura 2000 project and the 30 by 30 project in the US. They are talking about trying to put a value on nature. So they've got a term called ecosystem. What is it called? Ecosystem.
Oh, okay.
Not benefits, but it's something like that. And so they're going to put a value on pollination, for example, or how much sunlight your property gets, how much rain it gets. Those sort of things will be valued. And what a woman who's looked into this carefully in the U.S., Margaret Byfield, believes is that this is to increase the sort of the value of the U.S. to borrow against. So the U.S. government could continue to borrow and claim that these additional valuations make our country more valuable.
Right.
So we have
more collateral.
More collateral. Thank you. Ecosystem services is what this term is. It's been used by Peter Daszak in some of his articles, but it is a real term that ecologists and others are using now. So anyway, what it looks like is these folks are planning for a collapse of the financial system, and they've got something else in place and ready to go. And long as they can indebt most of the countries, even more than they already are, they'll be able to pull the plug when they wish.
Oh, dear. No one on the planet voted for any of these sustainable development goals that I can recall. No one's been demanding them. This hasn't involved the global citizenry at all, has it?
No, it hasn't. Thank you. But I'm told all over Europe, they have this little circle with the many colors and the sustainable development goals everywhere. We don't see them in the United States. Do you see them in New Zealand?
I think I've seen a few come up on websites, but not in your face on billboards in that way, or flags. No, not yet. Not yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they admit that during the last 9 years, basically, that there has been no progress. Or very little, and in some of the goals, they've gone backwards. And this is the reason why we now have to go much faster at achieving these goals so we meet the 2030 standards that some group of globalists has established back in 2015, because we haven't gotten anywhere near them yet.
Yeah, so things are speeding up because that's 6 years away. Can we go through some of the points that you've made on your Substack? I think we've just already touched on global governance. Transformation strengthening, they say. Is there anything more you want to say about that? And then we can get on to some of the other things that you mentioned here, the 10. Do you want to go through some of those? Because I think that will build up the picture for people, you know.
So this document doesn't look like a treaty. I think it was designed to sort of pull the wool over the eyes of the public. It successfully made me think it was not a treaty. It doesn't talk about, it's not, there's no room for signatures. It doesn't say when it's going to go into force. But if you read the fine details, they tell you in three different places, at least, how they are going to gain compliance. And so that's important. They want the UN wants to engage more with national parliamentarians so that these national parliamentarians can embed the UN's policies into their domestic legislation.
Like the WEF have, right? Klaus Schwab's famous quote.
Yes. Well, they've got the people, but now they've got to make it the law in all these countries. So that's one. Yeah. Another is that a purpose of this pact is to sort of create enforcement of other treaties and agreements that nations have gotten themselves involved with in the past, such as the Paris Climate Agreement. Mm. The U.S. has signed but not ratified it. And so they want to enforce these now, and they're looking for a greater means of enforcement. And they talk about, for some of these treaties, if enforcement mechanisms already exist, they want to be able to use them. So they're pretty serious, but it's all in the fine print. You have to comb through this document to find it.
Do you get the impression from doing that the wording is tweaked in a certain way to, because that's kind of what came through when we're talking about the IHRs with yourself and James Rogowski and others, that and the way that the thing sort of developed along the way, the rewritings and the new versions, that they were sort of tweaked to take the heat out of some of the descriptions and words, but yet they still kind of meant the same thing, you know?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. For example, there were about 8 or 10 versions of the pandemic treaty. And in only one version did they say that the WHO director general would select scientists who would then oversee gain-of-function research.
Hmm.
You know, so that immediately came out. You know, a few weeks later, that paragraph was gone. And they never mentioned gain-of-function research again in any of the other 8 or 10 versions. So I haven't read... I read the original version of this, and then I read this, which is the latest. So I can't tell you exactly how they've been tweaking the language back and forth, but the meaning, you know, it's flowery language. We're going to give you the Garden of Eden if you go along with our plans. We're going to get rid of poverty. We're going to educate people throughout their lifetime. You know, we're going to make sure that everyone has health care, blah, blah, blah. But they don't tell you how. They just say, we're going to give you everything. You know, let's do this.
Yeah, they're saying by working together, we can achieve a safer, more peaceful, just, equal, inclusive, sustainable, and prosperous future. Well, who doesn't want that as a concept?
Really, yeah, exactly.
I suppose. And that's what I mean about the happy talk. Okay, can we move through some of these points as well a bit more? Sustainable development to be at the center of multilateralism. And the financial architecture. Well, I think we've touched on that. We've already spun through a few. Mm-hmm. Unless there's anything more you want to say about that. But it feels like we're being set up now for a reset, a shock of the global financial system. We know with BRICS coming on, the $37 trillion debt that the US has, the derivatives mm-hmm. market. We've heard a bit about that. That it sounds like, you know, maybe some sort of perfect storm is on the horizon. They know about it. And they're trying to get ahead of it and benefit from it. I mean, there's my suspicious mind going off again, but what do you think about
that? Well, that's what they've done in the past. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that answers that, doesn't it? The goals for health. Are they goals for health or are they goals for controlling the movement of people around the planet? Is that what that's more about?
So what they say is everybody should be able to achieve the highest level of mental and physical health possible, which, you know, it doesn't have any meaning. But that has been in UN documents forever, you know, since the beginning of the UN. The specifics that are in this pact for the future, after they say that, are that they want everybody to have reproductive health care and vaccines. And they don't talk about the rest, like, how about primary health care? The other thing they do, which is exactly what the WHO did, is they talk about universal health coverage. Now, think about that. It's not universal health care. It's coverage. Look up the word coverage in the dictionary. Yep. And they're talking about health insurance. They want everyone to pay in to a program health coverage. Insurance. But there's nothing in there about making more medical schools or nursing schools or creating new clinics and hospitals. So we're all going to pay in for health care, but where are the people who are going to provide it? Or is it going to be all computerized and we just have to tell the phone our symptoms and it will spit out a prescription?
AI consulting kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, when they talk about coverage, but they don't talk about care and they don't tell you how it's going to happen, you know, you are left thinking, how is it going to happen? Maybe they won't need doctors anymore.
Well, coverage is an insurance term.
Yes.
At the cornerstone there. Does reproductive health mean making more babies, do you think?
Well, that's what many people think it means. Other people think it means birth control and access to abortions. The fact that they have said they want it universal seems to be clearly an attempt to stake a claim against the limits of abortion. For instance, in the United States, now abortion is left to each state to determine what its law is regarding abortion. So the UN is saying, no, abortion is a right, is a human right, and everyone should have access.
Again, it's not clarified, is it? Because you'd want to clarify. I mean, I don't want to get hung up on one thing, but that is an example. You want that clarified. What is it's like coverage. What does that mean?
Right. Exactly.
Anna.
In the WHO documents, they focus on reproductive health, vaccines, and mental health care. And they don't tell us what that means either. Are they going to put a psychiatrist in every village? But I have some fears that it may mean that, psychotropics will be available to keep the population calmed down.
Yeah. A need to promote trust in science. Well, we can see the glaring problem there. There's been a huge crashing of trust, not in science, but in people who tell us to trust the science. Without a trust in science, you can't really make much of this work, can you? Because it's all about, in the end, persuasion through the science.
Well, you know, what we learned during COVID, if we hadn't learned it already, was that the science is dependent on who pays for the research and the publications. And while I already knew that, what I didn't know was that a single individual like Tony Fauci could essentially control almost all the virology research around the world. Hmm. If you take the NIH, the NSF, the Wellcome Trust, and the Gates Foundation, you have the major funders of science, certainly medical and biological science in the world. And I think the fact that all of the recipients of those funds knew that if they spoke out during COVID, they would not, because Fauci had made this clear already to other people, they would not be funded again. Their career would end. And that is why people didn't, the scientists did not tell us the truth about what was going on with COVID. One reason anyway.
Yeah, and we had the podium of truth here in New Zealand with our Prime Minister, who will probably be involved in the summit, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Along with a few other notable New Zealanders. So they're all in on this. Is there anyone in your country pushing back against this specifically? I believe the 26 US governors recently said that they wouldn't comply with WHO, not with any of it.
So our organizations had a major push to try to stop the WHO, the approval of those two treaties. At the end of May. And so the culmination of that effort was to get 49 U.S. senators, at the time 24 governors, now 26, and 22 attorneys general to all come out with statements, which they signed their names to, that they would not go along with the WHO and didn't want the U.S. government to do so. Now, at the state level, that's important because in our country, the states, according to the Constitution, have the responsibility for health care. And so that legally, they can actually do that. They can say, we're not letting the WHO or the UN into our state. Now, I had not made the same kind of effort with the UN because it seemed to me that it was a massive effort to educate people about the WHO. Hmm. But I think once they learned about that, they understand the transition to the UN is pretty much the same thing. And I think that we will be able to elicit the same response. So it hasn't happened yet, right? They're having their meeting this coming weekend, and we'll see what happens. And then we will, you know, work with our politicians and see what we can do.
The aspirations, you touch on that too, outlandish aspirations. And you say that they're frankly outlandish, such as achieve a world in which humanity lives in harmony with nature. That's one of them. It seems like if there is an obvious overreach of aspiration, something's not right, right?
Yeah. Let me make a point. Actually, when I started looking into Peter Daszak back in early 2020, I found that it was a theme that he had written about, was this humans living in harmony with nature, and uh-huh. that humans were causing climate change and humans were causing pandemics. So these were false narratives that were being spread. I also found that Tony Fauci was writing about the same thing. And this is back in 2019 and 2020. So this is nothing new. This is part of the way this agenda gets moved forward. And what I think it means is in fact, what you said earlier, is that people are to be moved out of areas where people like Tony Fauci say there's a high risk of a zoonotic spread from animals to humans of a dangerous, deadly virus in this region. You know, there's a cave here. The bats live here that are harboring these viruses. And so we have to move the people. And then, you know, 10 years later, it turns out there was gold there, or there was oil there, or something else.
Lithium. And if it was a huge threat, it would have happened already. People are living everywhere, right. Would have been living everywhere, right? And there's been nothing, really, has there?
Right, exactly. Yeah. This whole concept of zoonosis, of the existential threats to human coming from animal viruses is baloney. I mean, this COVID came from a lab. This monkeypox probably came from a lab, too. And really, the only animal-to-human pandemics that we've had in the last 124 years have been influenza three or four times. And, apart from the 19 influenza, they haven't been very bad and hardly anyone noticed them. So it's another false concept that manages to support a narrative that gives, globalists more control over us.
It's incredible to think this could be happening. Meryl, spool back. I know this has been in train for a while. We realize that now, probably a couple of decades, hardcore. We just weren't aware, but here it is showing itself.
The first Earth Day was in 1970. So I would say, we've found that Maurice Strong, who was a Canadian, a buddy of David Rockefeller, he was designated the Secretary General of the first environmental conference in Stockholm in 1972. And then he was also the Secretary General of the Rio Environment Climate Conference in 1992. Mm-hmm. He was the first director of this new UN agency that was set up, the UN Environmental Program. And so when you drill down, you find out that this coterie of people actually sort of took over the UN on the environment and created these narratives and then pushed them out. So I would say that this particular way of doing things by using the environment goes back to at least 1970.
Wow, that's a lot of planning. So it's a weaponization of the environment against the human species. Is that some way of boiling it down to divide humanity from nature, to control, to take the relationship and influence of nature away, to then control, set them apart, and then to control and probably control nature the best way you can.
They took truthful statements that yes, we're causing too much pollution. Nobody wants pollution. Our air is polluted, our water is polluted, our food is polluted, right? There's microplastics in everybody and we're full of pesticides. So they were correct and the populace wanted that, but they were able to take that aspiration of people and twist it a little bit and turn it into this, where suddenly we have these sustainable development goals and everyone has to march to their tune.
And probably the Earth doesn't care. It's got another 5 billion years to do it all again.
Yeah. It takes a long time to get rid of the climate scientists who don't go along with the global warming narrative. And so that takes decades.
Yeah, and we're seeing that now. So what is your conclusion, Meryl, if you want to sort of wrap it all up into a nice sort of bite-sized description or whatever, sentence, paragraph, so people listening can really, work with it.
Sure. Well, the UN partnered with the World Economic Forum about 5 years ago, and basically they are both running the same scam on the world, which is to convince us that we need them to manage us, and they're asking for the authority to do so. Now, whether the nations give them that authority, I don't know how that works. I don't know what the carrots and sticks are that are being used for the diplomats or being used on the heads of state that will attend. But they are seeking to get an agreement And I don't think they will. I mean, obviously, there's some countries that aren't going to go along. Last year, they tried to get an agreement that the UN at the exact meeting, you know, in September, the yearly UN General Assembly meeting last year, tried to come up with a document that would support the WHO in its efforts. And 11 nations formally said, we're not going along. So I would assume that probably at least those 11 nations are not going to go along. What the UN did last year then was to basically pretend that everyone had gone along, have a statement signed by the, the president of the General Assembly, and claim that the world was supporting the WHO. So what I think is likely to happen after this is that the UN will claim victory. They will say, we want it, you know, people agree, and this is, and we're going forward. And then it's going to be up to the nations to either get out of the UN or say, we're not going along. There are ways to get out of treaties. Basically, the Vienna law on treaties says if a nation doesn't feel that a treaty is going along the way it thought it was supposed to, it can leave. And so, you know, and, you know, Trump tried to take the United States out of the WHO. He was told that he had to wait a year because the United States had put a proviso in the WHO Constitution saying we'd give them a year's notice and we'd pay up our dues. And so he waited the year and he lost the presidency and we never did leave. But we can, and so can every other nation if they want to, is leave this and say we're not going along. And if it, but, you know, they can't do it one at a time. A lot of them have to get together and be powerful. Last spring, the prime minister of Slovakia, Robert Fico, said he wasn't going along with the WHO. Tedros came to Slovakia and tried to talk him into going along. Tedros went back to Geneva, and in a few days, Robert Fico was shot and almost killed. That's right. It doesn't work if you're one small country. You need to create the alliances and say, you know, this is baloney. We'll see what happens. But I think in the United States, what happens in the United States is big. We were able to help get the governors, the attorney generals, and the senators to say no within 4 weeks of that meeting of the WHO. We didn't do the same thing now. I think that had a huge impact on the rest of the world. So we will see what happens going forward and what needs to be done. I think, you know, what I'm encouraging Americans to do is to call your members of Congress and your senators and say, look, we don't like this. Take us out of the UN system. You know, they've tried twice now to gain this dictatorial authority over us. And we don't go along and it's unconstitutional. Besides, many nations have constitutions that say the UN and the WHO cannot do these things. So they just have to read them and refuse.
Meryl Nass, nice that you could come back on our radio station again. Thank you for taking us through that. Your Substack is Meryl's Chaos Newsletter, if people want to look that up. And you talk about in quite some detail about those points, et cetera, what we've been chatting about. So let's see what happens. But we're on some sort of slippery slope, it feels to me. But that, I'm always thinking that these days, always prepared for the worst. But let's hope that the waking up that's going on, because I think it is going on, it's slow, but it's going on, we'll put some sort of handbrake on something. So anyway, great to talk to you again. I hope to chat to you again some other time as well.
Yeah, thank you very much.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.